Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 29. I am going to cover verses 1 through 40, offerings for the Feast of Trumpets and offerings that are required for the Feast of Booths. Our context is this. In chapter 28, we talked about the offerings that were required for the daily morning and evening sacrifice, for the weekly Sabbath offering, for the monthly new moon offerings on the first of each month, and then for two festival offerings, the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Feast of Weeks. So we're continuing with the same theme here. So now let's start with Numbers 29, verses 1 through 6. Now in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, seventh month is Tishri, first day of the month, you shall also have a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. It will be to you a day for blowing trumpets. So this is the Feast of Trumpets on the first day of Tishri, which is September, October. On our calendar. Verse 2, you shall offer a burnt offering as a soothing aroma to the Lord, one bull, one ram, and seven male lambs 1 year old without defect. As also their grain offering, fine flour mixed with oil, 3/10 of an ephah for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, and 1/10 for each of the seven lambs. Now all of that is complicated, but I'm going to show you that it's all part of a pattern, so it'll be easier to grasp. Verse 5, offer one male goat for a sin offering to make atonement for you. Besides the burnt offering of the new moon, remember this is also the first of the month, so every first of the month you had a new moon offering, and this is the first of the seventh month, so you have a new moon offering plus the Feast of Trumpets offering. So all of these Feast of Trumpet offerings are in verse 6, besides the burnt offering of the new moon and its grain offering, and the continual burnt offering, that's the daily offerings, we have those too, because it's a day, and we have offerings every day, and its grain offering and their drink offerings according to their ordinance for a soothing aroma and offering by fire to the Lord. All right, so let's get some order here. We're on Tishri 1, it's the first day of the seventh month, and so there's three offerings that need to be done. We got the daily morning and evening sacrifice that we talked about in the last chapter. That's a lamb in the morning, lamb in the evening. Then we got the offerings, the burnt offerings for the new moon because it's the first day of the month. So the new moon offerings were seven lambs, one ram, and two bulls. Lambs, ram, and bulls. Lambs, ram, and bulls. That's for the new moon. Now, in addition to that, because it's the Feast of Trumpets, a special new moon, we have extra one bull, one ram, and seven lambs. Seven lambs, one ram, and one bull. Not bulls, but one bull. So it's a little bit different. One bull added extra. And this is all for burnt offerings. Now, this is the same. The two bulls, one ram, and seven lambs required for the new moon is the same that was required for the each of the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread and also for the Feast of Weeks. Same pattern. Seven lambs, one ram, and two bulls. But now this one bull, one ram, and seven lambs is extra for this special new moon, the Feast of Trumpets. Now, when we talk about the flour mixed with oil and the wine that's offered with all these animals that we've been looking at in the last two chapters, it's standard all the way, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. The way it works is it all depends on the animal. If it's a lamb, it's 1/10 of an ephah of flour. It's 1/4 of a hin of oil mixed with that flour and 1/4 of a hin for the drink offering. Now, our particular passage here only mentions the flour, doesn't mention the oil and the wine, but I'm assuming this oil and the wine is the same. That's for a lamb. Now, if it's for a ram, it's 2/10 of an ephah of flour for the ram, 1/3 of a hin of oil to mix with that flour, and 1/3 of wine for the drink offering. And if it's a bull, it's 3/10 of an ephah for the bull, of flour. For oil to mix with that flour, it's 1/2, 2 quarts of a hin, 1/2 of a hin of wine, of oil to mix with the flour, and then for the drink offering, 1/2 of a hin of wine. Now, that's all I'm going to say about the animals and their associated oil, flour, and drink wine that has to go along with these animals. It's all the same. It's been the same last chapter. It's the same for the Feast of Weeks. It's the same for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, we're in Tishri here, Tishri 1. Gill and Clark point out that Tishri has more religious observations in it than any other month. Tishri 1, the one we're talking about here, is the Feast of Trumpets. Tishri 10 is the famous Day of Atonement. Then Tishri 15 through Tishri 21 is the Feast of Tabernacles. Tishri 22 is the so-called Great Day the last great day of the feast, or the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, got different names. I'll talk about that in a minute. Now, incidentally, Tishri was the first month of the civil year, but in the religious year, in the religious calendar of Israel, it was the seventh month. Now, on this seventh month, there was a holy convocation. That was a festival Sabbath. You don't do any laborious work. And because you didn't do any laborious work, it's called a Sabbath. I just call it a festival Sabbath to distinguish it from the weekly Sabbath. Now, there's a question here that I have not been able to find the answer to. You should do no laborious work. Does laborious work mean, is that just a kind of a redundant way of saying don't do work, because labor means work? Or is it a special kind of work? You shall do no laborious work like working in the field, but it's okay if you fix the food and such. I think I read in John Gill somewhere a long time ago there was such a distinction. But if so, I've looked for it today and can't find it, so I'll have to leave that open. But it does make sense, that distinction, because somebody has got to handle the food and the festivities and all that kind of stuff. But you wouldn't be out working in the fields doing your normal labor. But at any rate, we'll just say it's a festival Sabbath. You don't work. Now, this Feast of Trumpets on Tishri 1 is also known as Rosh Hashanah, the New Year's Day, because it's the New Year's Day because it's the beginning of the civil year, first day of the year. So it's Rosh Hashanah. Rosh is head. Hashanah is the year, head of the year, New Year's Day. Now, the offering that I told you about, all the seven lambs, one ram, and one bull, that's the burnt offering that's special for the Feast of Trumpet. That's the burnt offering. There was also a sin offering, which is very common, and all these festival sacrifices, one male goat. That's in the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. That's in the Feast of Weeks. And right here in the Feast of Trumpets, same thing. One male goat for a sin offering. All of this is besides the burnt offering of the new moon. That's verse 6. The new moon burnt offering, of course, was two bulls, not one bull, but two bulls, one ram, and seven lambs. And also besides the continual burnt offering, which is the lamb in the morning, lamb in the evening. So I wonder, sort of wonder, why there was only one bull required for that Feast of Trumpets offering, whereas two bulls were required for the new moon. I don't know, maybe just to distinguish between the new moon and the Feast of Trumpets. I have no answer for that. Couldn't find anything in the commentaries. Let me put a cap on this by quoting from Kylan Delitzsch to show you all the offerings that were offered on the Feast of Trumpets. Number one, a yearly lamb in the morning and evening. There's your daily burnt offerings, morning and evening sacrifice. Number two, the new moon sacrifice is the first of the month. And so that would be two bulls, one ram, and seven lambs, plus the meal and drink offerings that go with that. All right, that's two. Third thing is the sin offering of the male goat. And the fourth is the burnt offering of the Feast of Trumpets. One bull, not two, but one bull, one ram, and seven lambs. We go down to Numbers 29, verses 7 through 11. Then on the 10th day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall humble yourselves, and you shall not do any work. Now, of course, this is the famous Day of Atonement. It's not called that here in our passage in Numbers, but in Leviticus 23, 26 through 32, where the Day of Atonement is established, it's actually called the Day of Atonement. Let me read that. Verse 26, Leviticus 23, the Lord again spoke to Moses, the 10th day of this seventh month is the Day of Atonement. Seventh month is Tishri. You are to hold a sacred assembly and practice self-denial. That means fasting. You are to present a fire offering to the Lord on this particular day. You are not to do any work. For it is a day of atonement to make atonement for yourselves before the Lord your God. If any person does not practice self-denial on this particular day, he must be cut off from his people. Now that'll keep you on a fast. Self-denial means a fast. You break your fast, you're cut off, you're killed. I will destroy among his people anyone who does any work on this same day. And that's why I think cut off there means killed rather than banished. It's ambiguous, but in the very next verse he says, I will destroy. So that makes you think that he's talking about being cut off if you eat on the Day of Atonement. You're not to do any work. This is a permanent statute. It will be a Sabbath of complete rest for you. You must practice self-denial. You're to observe your Sabbath from the evening of the ninth day of the month until the following evening. Evening of the ninth day, of course, is the 10th, according to Jewish practice. So there's your Day of Atonement. Very famous day. It's the most holy day of the year. I remember in the 1964 World Series, Sandy Koufax could not pitch on the Day of Atonement. It was in September sometime when the series was going on. He was Jewish. One of the best pitchers that ever pitched in the major leagues. Unfortunately, he was a Dodger. Now, what is the burnt offering for the Day of Atonement? Well, we'll see it's the same as the Feast of Trumpets. One bull, not two, one bull, one ram, seven lambs. And then the flour and is the same, the flour offerings, the grain offerings are the same. Not going to talk about it. One male goat for a sin offering, that's the same. And then we notice in verse 11, all of these burnt offerings and that one male goat for a sin offering is besides the sin offering of atonement. What is this sin offering of atonement? Well, that's referring to another male goat that was mentioned in Leviticus 16 concerning the Day of Atonement. It was the male goat that was used for atonement, and it was the goat that wasn't the scapegoat out of two goats that were chosen. So let me read that, Leviticus 16:7-9. He shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. Then Aaron shall offer the goat on which the lot for the Lord fell and make it a sin offering. So that's verse 9 is the goat that the lot fell that was a sin offering. It was not going to be a scapegoat which carried sins off into the wilderness. So there were two lambs used for sin offerings in the Day of Atonement. And by the way, there was also a bull offered. It's not mentioned here in Numbers, but in Leviticus 16:6, then Aaron shall offer the bull for the sin offering, which is for himself, that he may make atonement for himself and for his household. And so just to summarize, you got your burnt offering for the Day of Atonement. It's one bull, not two, but one bull, one ram, seven male lambs. You got your sin offering, a male goat for a sin offering, mentioned in Numbers, then also the other one mentioned in Leviticus, the sin offering that was chosen by lot. So you got two sin offerings, two male goats, as well as the daily morning and evening lamb sacrifice, along with the grain and drink offerings associated with that. So now we go to Numbers 29, verses 12 through 16. Then on the 15th day of the seventh month, now we've left the Day of Atonement, now we're starting the Feast of Booths. On the 15th day of the seventh month, that's Tishri, you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no laborious work, and you shall observe a feast of the Lord for 7 days. So Tishri 15 is the Sabbath, festival Sabbath day with no work, and then there's a feast for 7 days, so that goes from Tishri 15 to Tishri 21. And you shall present a burnt offering, an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord, 13 bulls, 2 rams, 14 male lambs when you're old. Now we're talking about a ton of sacrifices, a lot more, which are without defect. And their grain offering, fine flour mixed with oil, and the same amounts, 3/10 for the bulls, 2/10 for each of the 2 rams, 1/10 for each of the 14 lambs. That's standard, one male goat for a sin offering, that's standard too. Besides the continual burnt offering, his grain offering, and his drink offering, all of that standard. Now, notice on this first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, how many animals are sacrificed? 13 bulls, that's a lot. Now, the Day of Atonement was a sad day, a day of mourning and fasting, no eating. But now, by golly, the Feast of the Ingathering, the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles, it's a harvest festival. Sometimes it's called the Feast of Ingathering, and because it was such a festival, a time of joy, there was a lot of bulls. So we go from eating nothing, we go from a Day of Atonement, which is a time of fasting, the people ate nothing, till now we have lots and lots and lots of animals offered. In fact, there are 32 animals offered on this first day, Tishri 15th. Let's count them. This John Gill says 32, and I counted them up to check him out on it, and it's true. First, you got 2 lambs for the morning and evening sacrifice. We're talking about burnt offerings now, plus 13 bulls for burnt offerings. That gives you 15, plus 2 rams for a burnt offering. That gives you 17 animals, plus 14 lambs for a burnt offering. That gives you 31 animals, and then you got 1 goat for the sin offering, which is 32. Now, that is a heap of animals. Let me give you what the commentator Benson says about this. Quote, this was a vast charge, but more easy at this time of the year than at any other, for this was a time of leisure and plenty. Now their barns were full, their wine presses overflowed, and their hearts were enlarged with joy and gratitude to God for the blessings of the harvest. Yet this troublesome and expensive service made their religion a very grievous yoke, under which the best men among them groaned, longing for the coming of the Messiah, when their own doctors have said, no sacrifices shall remain but those of thanksgiving, praise, and prayer. So they were thankful, but it was a burdensome thing. And really, we see 13 bulls. We're not finished yet because of the, it goes 13 bulls on day one of the Feast of Tabernacles, 12 bulls on day two, 11 bulls on day three, and down it goes until they get to the first day, the seventh day of the feast. We see all that in Numbers chapter 29, verses 17 through 34, and I'm not going to read all that to you, but basically let me read the first part of it. Then on the second day, 12 bulls, 2 rams, 14 male lambs. Now the rams and male lambs stay the same, 2 rams, 14 male lambs, all the way down for every day of the Feast of Booths. But the number of bulls decrements each day, starting with 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. And each day has a male goat for a sin offering. Nothing strange about that. And, of course, each associated animal has its grain offerings. And I assume the oil with the grain, although the oil is not mentioned. And also the drink offerings. Everything's standard there. Not going to change that 1/4 hen, 1/3 hen, 1/2 hen pattern. And so what we see here is 13 bulls day 1, 12 bulls on day 2, 11 bulls on day 3, 10 bulls on day 4, 9 bulls on day 5, 8 bulls on day 6, and 7 bulls on day 7. 7 bulls on day 7. Now, John Gill says the reason for this strange phenomenon is to emphasize that on day 7 there would be 7 bulls, because 7 is the typical number of completion, perfection, and holiness. All commentators agree on that. And look here, on day 7 you got 7 bulls, it works out perfectly. That's probably the best solution. Gill suggests another reason for this is to show the decreasing sin of the people. I doubt that seriously. He also has another suggestion that perhaps it means the gradual disappearance of the ceremonial law. I don't think that's too much of a stretch for me. I don't see the symbolism, but I like this. On day 7, there's 7 bulls. Jameson Fawcett Brown says the reason that the number dropped every day is to give the Israelites the feeling that the sacrifices were becoming less burdensome each day. Perhaps that's so, but I like the 7th day 7 bulls solution as to the reason behind this. We go now to Numbers 29, verses 35 through 40, and we'll finish up this chapter. On the 8th day, you shall have a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work. Now, let me just stop right there. The 8th day, that means Tishri 22, Tishri 15 through 21 are the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. And then on the 8th day, that's Tishri 22, the day after the Feast of Tabernacle. John Gill says that this 8th day was not properly a part of the Feast of Tabernacles, but a sort of an appendage. So I'm going to talk about that 8th day in a minute after I finish reading these verses. Verse 36, but you shall present a burnt offering, an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord. 1 bull, 1 ram, and 7 male lambs. So the pattern in this chapter is for the Feast of Trumpets on Tishri 1, 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 lambs. For the Day of Atonement, 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 lambs for the burnt offering. The so-called 8th day of the feast, or the great day of the feast, or the last great day of the feast. On that day, same thing. 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 lambs. Now, why is this 8th day of the Feast of Tabernacles, or the 8th day that's tacked on at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles, why is it called the last great day of the feast? Well, that comes from John 7:37. Now, on the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. And that's when there was a great pouring out of water and a water ceremony, and Jesus referred to that and said, come drink. I'll give you rivers of living water that'll give you life. And that very famous scene there in John 7:37, and you see it was called on the last day, the great day of the feast. And I don't think that Luke named it that. That's what the Jews called it, the great day of the feast. Now, I noticed on the internet that a lot of Christian writers take this last great day of the feast and say it refers to the millennial kingdom and it refers to the end of the world when all the people are brought in. Well, I guess they get that because the harvest festival is a type for the ingathering of the church. I can go with that. The 8th day, since that's the last day, that means when it's all said and done. Well, that could be, except I don't believe in an end of the world millennium. I believe that the millennium is the church age now. But I guess you could say that the last great day of the ingathering would be when all the nations have come to Christ, that are going to come when the number of the elect have been fulfilled. But I will leave that to the fancy imaginations of preachers and make the point that in verse 36, the number of bulls is dropped from 7 bulls on day 7, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, to 1 bull on the 8th day, the last great day of the feast. back to our normal pattern of one bull, or at least the normal pattern for the feast in this particular chapter, one bull, one ram, and seven lambs. Now, some peace offerings are mentioned in verse 19. You should present these to the Lord at your appointed times besides your votive offerings and your free will offerings, which are and at the end of the verse, and for your peace offerings besides those offerings. I assume that because those offerings, free will offerings and votive offerings, were types of peace offerings. So peace offerings were done for Thanksgiving, when a vow was fulfilled, and that kind of thing. And a peace offering in general is just, you wanted it. It was just a voluntary giving of thanks to the Lord. And they weren't really prescribed on these festival days. They were more individual offerings. And so I think that's what's being referred to here, is you give all these prescribed festival offerings in addition to any ordinary individual peace offerings that might have been offered. Now, I do think this is going from my memory, and I could be wrong, but one of the earlier offerings, I think it was the Feast of Weeks, did have peace offerings with it, but generally they were individual offerings. I just went to the internet and checked my memory, and indeed, Leviticus 23:19 says that there were peace offerings offered at the time of the Feast of Weeks, and so that's an exception to the general. My general rule is that most peace offerings were individual peace offerings, not festival peace offerings. So they were to be offered in addition to all these other offerings. Verse 40, Moses spoke to the sons of Israel in accordance with all that the Lord had commanded Moses. Why is Moses speaking all this stuff? Well, the NIV Study Bible says he's recapitulating feast, and this recapitulation helped Moses transfer power to Joshua. But I must point out that it's more than just recapitulation. I mean, there's some added stuff here that you don't see in Leviticus. But anyway, the idea is these feasts are going to go on just like they've been going on for the 38 years we've been in the wilderness. Things aren't going to be any different under Joshua, so you just keep right on going after I, Moses, am dead and gone from your presence and in the presence of God. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Numbers chapter 29, verses 1 through 40. That prepares us to go to Numbers 30, verses 1 through 16, in which we will look at men's vows and women's vows. This is not a chapter about marriage. It's about the difference between when a man takes a vow and a woman takes a vow. Hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.